reconnecting our children with the natural world. You don't have to see the research to know that it's true that kids in the U.S., and other countries too, don't spend as much time outdoors as previous generations did. For most kids, gone are the days of mucking around in a creek all day. Instead, many kids are indoors, playing video games, watching television, sending texts, and scrolling through social media feeds. In 2005, children's advocate Richard Louv coined a term for this lack of interaction with the outdoors, calling it nature deficit disorder, an idea that has received a lot of attention in the years since. I'm Jennifer Rooks. On today's show, we will hear from Richard Louv, and we'll talk with educators and authors dedicated to reconnecting our kids with the natural world. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Before there were smartphones and tablets, kids looking for something to do would often head outside to explore. Today, we're going to discuss the importance of children connecting with nature and its role in boosting their learning, development, and overall well-being. Joining me in our studio, Ann Steyer, she is founder and director of Juniper Hill School. David Koval is a children's book author and illustrator. His new book, Run Wild, focuses on inspiring kids to get outside. And joining us from her home in California, Sharon Lovejoy. She is an author, illustrator, lecturer, and teacher whose life work centers on children and nature. And a little later in the program, we will hear from Richard Louv, author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder, and other books. As always, we want to hear from you. Did you spend your free time exploring the great outdoors when you were young? What about your kids? And what do you think young people can learn from nature? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. David, your new children's book celebrates children and nature. Tell us about your own background and how that led you to create this book.
Well, I grew up here in Maine, and had a fantastic childhood outside. I live right now in New York City, which is completely different, of course. But I grew up in Brunswick, Maine, and also fortunate that my family had a cabin up in Loon Lake, Rangeley, Maine. And it was, I'm sure a lot of people have this kind of memory of childhood in which it was open the door and go outside and don't come home until dinner. And so it was a lot of time spent out just exploring by myself with friends, just kind of wandering.
And you've harnessed this into a children's book, Run Wild. And you didn't turn out too wild, it seems.
Well, I think there's a lot of discussion about, getting off of digital. And I think it's not just for kids, but for all of us.
Oh, sure.
And you know, I my other life is as a graphic designer and a head of this branding agency. And at one point, I was just like all I was doing is working. And the impetus of Running Wild was also for myself too. Is like I needed to get unhinged and unhooked of all of that digital stuff. But more than just digital, I think exploring for me as a kid. Was doing it by myself and without necessarily an adult around, which I know sounds super scary in this day and age, but that was a time that I really cherished.
Mm. Sharon, you also use books to help connect children and adults to nature, and you've written several books. Why did you make this such a central theme to your work?
I saw that children were just not connecting with nature. They were not going outside. They were in front of a television at that time. And when I would go to schools and take a nature thing like a worm or a lizard, it was as though I showed them the world. So I knew I wanted to have my life dedicated to doing this.
Anne, tell us about the school you started and about the principles behind place-based education.
So I'm thrilled to be here today because I feel like we've been on the precipice of this movement for the last 7 years. Juniper Hill School started in 2011. And so we've just actually today, this morning, ended our seventh year. And it was founded on the tenets of really connecting children to themselves, each other, and their communities. And that community includes, very much so here in the state of Maine, includes being outside in the natural world. Our world is nature here in Maine. And more often, we actually received a comment from a young child through his parents the other day where he said, "Mom, how come the children aren't outside? We're driving to the beach to greet all of the children from Juniper Hill. We just had a beach day the other day." And he said, "Where are the kids?" And it was a time when he could have seen plenty of children playing outside. And this was just amazing to him. So I think one of the things that the school really was founded upon was being able to get children outside, moving their bodies, and being able to connect them to the natural world. So I know that there are children here in Maine who are getting more hip to being outside, and it's happening in schools. I get really excited when I see more and more of this happening. So place-based education is really connecting children to the natural world or through their place. And so at Juniper Hill School, we have kind of two levels where we start with the pre-kindergarten, and the kindergarten are outside the whole school day. And yes, even when it's negative 20 on the thermometer. And as we say at Juniper Hill, there's nothing wrong with the weather. It's just the wrong clothing. So we do a lot of education to do that. And it's not outside for outside's sake. It's really being outside so that children can learn and be so available to their learning with their brains and their bodies that it's really sinking in. So when then they get older, they do a lot of projects connecting them to the actual community, to the towns, the watersheds, et cetera. So,
all right. You mentioned, go ahead, Sharon, jump in.
You know, and so right, because I don't think you can start children too early. I think my son was 10 days old when I first took him out and ran his hands over plants and showed him dragonflies and butterflies. So take them out when they're newborns and introduce them to the world around them. It's a wonderful world. And kids do not go out and play the way they used to.
I want to tie in, I know we're really talking about children here, but David, I want to tie in this idea of adults. This seems to be something that's right now in the moment what we all need. I mean, I believe one of the phrases is forest bathing that comes from the Japanese. Yes. But it really is paying, not just being in nature, but paying attention to nature.
Yeah, paying attention to nature and yourself in it. I mean, I find, I'm thinking back to my childhood, but even now, getting off of that digital sort of feeling it's almost like all of the content and all of the ideas are sort of pushed at us through our screens. Like what we decide to look at is at the screens and it's at us. Rather than when you go out in nature, and I think this is especially important for kids, they get to choose what to look at. They get to discover it for themselves. And to me, that's something that we're sort of losing a little bit of ourselves in the fact that we're becoming sort of passive and observers, of other people's stories, other people's content. You get to that moment when you are deciding for yourself, am I going to scale up that rock? Am I going to test my limits by going over that log? Or just sitting and quietly and being in nature, you get to sort of know a little bit more about yourself that way.
You do.
Sharon, go ahead. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that something I think about every day is the poet Mary Oliver's comment, pay attention, be astonished, which is all you need to do as a child, and tell about it. That's my job as a grown-up who wants to connect children to nature. So pay attention, be astonished, tell about it.
Sharon, I want to ask you for some ideas, because I know that the whole idea of counteracting nature deficit disorder has been criticized a little bit for being like a first world problem for a certain socioeconomic group. And I know, sure, we can't all afford to send our kids on an outdoor adventure, wilderness expedition for 10 days or a month. And we can't all afford maybe a whitewater rafting adventure. But you like to focus on smaller things that children and families can do. Why don't you give us some ideas?
I like to focus on the macrocosm. And I think you can just walk out in your own backyard and use a magnifying glass. I have something called an explorer's kit in one of my books, and it's a magnifying glass, a stethoscope. They're only about $10, but you can lay them right on the stem of a plant and hear it drinking water. You can hear the different voices in the trees. You can hear when woodpeckers are there. I like children to take pictures, and I love journaling. And you had Bernd Heinrich and Wheelwright on a few weeks ago. They talked about the importance of journaling, and there are so many good ways to get kids out there to draw and to journal. And when you record what you see and what you experience, you don't forget about it. You can go back to it. So a journal is really important. I just kind of hit the pager with some story communications journals that I'm using for teaching. And they have really great ideas and prompts for parents or for teachers to use. You know, look at that bug. What color is it? Can you draw that bug? Is there a smell out in the yard today? Touch this. Look at that. Use your magnifying glass to look closely at this plant. And, you know, just simple tools like a stethoscope, a magnifying glass, children's binoculars or a monocular. It's a little bit easier to use. Those are things that I use when I'm working with kids. I carry my kit around with me. And then I also carry a piece of plastic so we can scoop up dirt or we can scoop up forest duff and let the kids see what's in that. It's just a matter of looking at the macrocosm. And then the kids get tuned into that and they can look at the whole world around them.
And what do we know about the scientific research into how kids' brains mm-hmm. respond to being outside in the natural world as opposed to indoors?
Yeah. So there's a lot of incredible research here with brain research and the way children really are alive. You know, there's a wonderful comment that often people will say when I go into stores in Damariscotta, which is nearby Alna, where the school is, and they'll say, oh, I knew that I was talking to a Juniper Hill school kid the other day because they were so alive and they had so much to say and their eyes were still sparkling and they were seven, as opposed to this idea of really what we're noticing in a lot of children now is their eyes are more and more deadened and they dread school even more so than usual. We had not a dry eye among children today and families for sure around summer vacation. They don't want to go. And I think there's something about that deep connection in the brain being so aware of what's going on. We work with occupational therapists. Some people might know Angela Hanscom's work on Balanced and Barefoot. It's a wonderful book that came out a couple years ago. And she talks a lot about how children's brains really connecting to their bodies, and now that this huge rise of children who need to receive occupational therapy services, and she actually comes at it from that side of things as opposed to the education side. And she says, you know, this huge rise and people have waiting lists and that sort of thing for children to receive these services. And really, you know, we're paying huge amounts of money for kids to go see these things, to go to the offices, and they're inside an office with headphones on for birdsong, and they're walking across a knobbly balance beam that costs $450 plus the visit, et cetera. Right. And really, we can take their shoes off in the natural world and have them walk on a log and listen to birds in the trees and wonder how far away that is and the distance. So it increases the awareness in the brain. And they've actually done a lot of research to show which centers of the brain are lighting up. And so all centers, as you might imagine. And so yes. It's these pieces around not only inquiry, empathy, awe, astonishment. I love that you used my absolute favorite guiding poet there, Sharon, thank you. So Mary Oliver is such a mentor for all of us. Every morning I read from Devotions, her newest. So I think just I'm not somebody who I connect very deeply to the heart in the work that I do. And so I'm not somebody you won't see me like rattling off all the statistics of the brain science. I rely on a lot of other people to do that. For me, it's much more about what do I see in a child's eyes? Those are the windows to their soul. And they're the windows to whether or not they're going to be super smart and super alive and committed to helping this world be a better place and being a better human. And that's what I see in children's brain science and development. Yeah,
David, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment.
And I want you to adopt me and take me to Juniper Hill.
Me too. Can I come to your school?
You know, chemically discussing this, you know, they talk about the
dopamine
that we produce when we play with a computer and get a computer feedback, but even more when we're out having simple pleasures. And you don't need to go on vacation. You don't need to go anywhere, but just outside and look up at a tree. And I do know the Juniper Hill kids. We have a place in Damariscotta, and I love their engagement. I love it.
All right, so I'm going to go to a call. I'm going to go to Clay, calling from Old Town. Hi, Clay. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I get a, kind of try to keep it short, but, you know, back in the day, you know, I'd born early 1960s, and so, you know, and before me, my parents, you know, and it's, we kind of created the society that we lived in, you know, and I think with kids on the computer, we're creating, a society that we're all seeing on the news nowadays, you know, and when I grew up, we didn't know what ticks were because I don't think there were any. But nowadays, it's like nobody knows what a tick is, you know. And when I found a bug, I went in and I asked my mom what it was, you know. And I found a snake. I asked her what kind of snake it was, and it was always digging around in the garden and stuff. And I think that, you know, it's a society thing bigger than anything. If we if we put kids outside, like some of your panel there, and they take them out and they do stuff with them. And I think that's what we need to do if we want to change what I call the way society is now. We can create what we had by getting kids outside.
Clay, thanks so much for your call. And you've got some nods going on here in the studio. But we need to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We'll also hear from Richard Louv. Stay with us. This is Main Calling.
You make Main Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. A Gunquit Playhouse with Rodgers and Hammerstein's groundbreaking musical, Oklahoma, June 13th through July 7th. AGunquitPlayhouse.org. And Main Community Foundation, celebrating 35 years of investing in Maine communities. Learn more at MaineCF.org.
There can be a lot of psychological noise involved in teaching.
A plus.
Great job.
Great job.
You keep messing up. How are you not getting
this? Way to go.
Let's try that.
But what if you replace all that chit-chat with a click? How an animal training tool is helping new surgeons learn their craft. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hidden Brain, Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. Mainers vote next Tuesday, determining local races, the future of ranked choice voting, the nominees for Republican and Democratic gubernatorial primary contests, and the Democratic nominee for the 2nd Congressional District seat. Your Vote 2018 is an election resource online at mainepublic.org. The primary debates are available there anytime for on-demand viewing. And this weekend, both Maine Public Radio and television will offer another chance to hear and see these debates. On radio, that's tomorrow afternoon from 12 noon to 3:30. And on Maine Public Television, that's Sunday afternoon and evening. For the complete broadcast schedule, just go to mainepublic.org/yourvote.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Connecting Children with Nature. Joining me, David Koval. He's a children's book author and illustrator. Ann Stiers is director of Juniper Hill School, which emphasizes place-based education and nature immersion. And joining us from California, Sharon Lovejoy, an author, illustrator, and educator focused on children and nature. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Richard Louv. His book, Last Child in the Woods, introduced the idea of nature deficit disorder, which prompted greater attention nationwide and throughout the world, really, to exposing children to nature. His most recent book, Vitamin N, The Essential Guide to a Nature-Rich Life, further explores that theme. He also founded the Children and Nature Network. Richard Louv, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome.
It has been 13 years since the term nature deficit disorder entered our vocabulary. Since then, we've seen an exponential surge in kids' exposure to technology. It's almost like you were prescient. Technology keeps them indoors and sedentary even more than before. Have kids gotten any further from nature, in your view?
Well, first, I should compliment your earlier guests and callers. They represent another trend that is going on, a counter trend to the barriers between children and the rest of the natural world. And there are more and more people like that out there working to connect kids to nature. In terms of the technology, that probably has increased quite a bit. There are studies that show that the use of iPads and iPhones is moving lower and lower in age and in the grades in schools. It's a powerful force to stand up to, but it's not the only barrier between children and nature. If we focus too much on that and demonize, say, video games, something I try not to do because, for one reason, there's a practical reason. Anything that adults demonize, kids want to do more of. But secondly, if we spend too much time blaming technology, we'll not look at other barriers, such as bad urban design. Where are you going to walk? The destruction of habitat around us. The desertion of traditional biology by education. There's a long list of issues that we have to contend to, and chief among them is the fear that parents feel. And I never blame parents for feeling that fear of strangers. I felt it too. But we have to become very, very conscious about connecting kids to nature for their healthy development.
Your new book, Vitamin N, prescribes a number of remedies and tips for introducing more nature into your life. What are some basic steps people can take to introduce nature, not just to their kids, but reintroduce or reconnect your entire family?
Well, it's hard to summarize 500 ways to do this.
Okay, one or two tips?
Some of the basics are put it on the calendar. I mean, we schedule soccer. Why shouldn't we schedule nature as a family? The second thing is, for parents, don't think about this as another stress-producing should do on the list that you put on your refrigerator door that causes you stress, that list, all the things you should do. Think about it as an antidote to the stress that's caused by all of the things we're supposed to do during the day. Everything that kids receive from exposure to the natural world, from stress reduction to longer attention span to physical health, all of those benefits also come to the parents or the other adults who take kids outside in nature. So this is for everybody, not only for kids.
Sure, you don't have to be a scientist to know that if you're in a really bad mood to go on a walk, right?
Right, and a lot of this is just common sense, and has been forgotten or was in danger of being forgotten. It's being remembered now, and I think that your guests are an illustration of that. But science also has finally paid attention to this. When I wrote Last Child in the Woods, which was published in 2005, I cited about 60 studies that were available then. Before then, this issue had been virtually ignored by science, and there are a couple of reasons. One is science has a blind spot in terms of defining what nature is. It is hard to define to science. The second is, where does the money come from for research? So what pill can you sell? So I cited about 60 studies that were available then. today, if you go to the Children in Nature Network website, and it's the nonprofit that grew out of Last Child in the Woods, to the research library, you can see abstracts to well over 700 studies, almost all of them on the benefits of nature to kids. There's not one study that I've seen that undermines this basic argument. And so science now is paying attention. It's now kind of a growth industry in the research world.
Well, Richard Loof, thanks so much for joining us. Before I let you go, I need to ask you, it sounds to me as though you're hopeful. Is that true?
Well, I am. There is a movement that has emerged. And when I imagined that movement in Last Child, it was wishful thinking. Children Nature Network's conference last year in Vancouver, it's an international conference of people who are working on this, drew about 1,000 people from all over the world from 25 countries. So this is now a worldwide movement. And again, your callers and your guests before are part of that movement, and there are thousands of people like that out there working very hard to turn this around.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Richard Loof is probably best known for coining the term nature deficit disorder, but he's written several books and prompted a whole sort of worldwide conversation about this. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to go to Una, who's calling from Ona, who's calling from Alna. Hi, Ona. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, Ona from Alna. I am an extremely grateful Juniper Hill parent. I have 7-year-old twins who have been going there for 2 years now. My twins were born a month early, and we were faced with potential developmental delays, academic delays. My son has a form of hydrocephalus that resulted in sensory processing issues for him when he was younger. And both of my kids had speech delays and had speech therapy until they were 3 years old. And we just finished our second year, and they're academically ahead. Both of them are just incredible people, and my son's sensory processing issues no longer exist. I was shocked to learn when I went to our local RSU's budget meeting that their percentage of children with IEPs is over 20%, which is way over the national average, and it's climbing. And we moved to Maine for the nature and for my children's chance to be outdoors, and we found Juniper Hill by a happy accident. But I have no doubt that if my kids were attending a public school where they were indoors all day, that my kids would be part of that 20%.
Ona, thank you so much for your call, and that's great, wonderful news about your children. I want to go out to Sharon Lovejoy in California. Sharon, if you're not lucky enough to be able to have a Juniper Hill in your backyard, what recommendations do you have for public school teachers and traditional schools to introduce more nature into the classroom?
You know, you can do it with indoor plants. In Camp Granny, I talk about, for schools especially, bring garbage in from home and let the kids see the life force in the garbage. Bring in worms from the soil. Let the kids have a terrarium with worms and snails. There are just so many things you can do indoors during the winter, but really, I had read this thing a few years ago, and it said that children are suffering an accelerated childhood. And so I want to tell people, do it simply, do it every day. I don't care if it's raining. If it's raining, that's just a chance. Do it day and night. Go outside with your children. Go outside day and night. And I don't like putting things on the calendar. I just like knowing that every day a parent or a teacher will go outside. And, you know, I went to a garden in New York City that's cost $15 million for children. And I went to watch the children. I do that. I'm sort of the child stalker. I watch them and make notes. And what the children were doing was absolutely ignoring the $15 worth of plastic flowers and charts and everything. And they were climbing on rocks. They were jumping from stump to stump. Yeah. And that's the best thing. And in 1995, I spoke in Sweden. They have a thing called Skolans Utrum, and they believe in challenging children with things that are challenging that we may not be able to get away with. But those rocks, those stumps, climbing a tree, the simplest things of all are what the kids need. And you don't need money for it. You just need to take time. And kids don't want parallel time. They want interactive time.
Can I jump in here for just a minute, Sharon? Sorry. I just piggybacking a little bit on what you said, but I asked a board member, you know, what would you give me some tips to say today? You know, we were having a wonderful conversation this morning, and I had, you know, I had all my pieces that I was going to talk about. And she said, the most important thing you can talk about is the reason we're here, and that is risk. So the benefits of risk in nature-based work that we do, no matter where it is. I work with a ton of public schools. In fact, Juniper Hill School is technically a private school, but it is really fast becoming the community school for the town of Alma. And that is something that is being said by many of the people who live in Alna, and they really are rallying around this little school because they don't have another school. So it's they haven't since the late 50s. So I think one of the things that is so valuable about exactly what you're saying is that that's what children will do. So people will say to me things around, what do you need to do this work? You must have all these, you know, various things that you use. And I said, the most valuable thing that I can have is what nature provides. So the sticks, for example, voted into the Toy Hall of Fame in 2008. I got about 1,500 emails that day. And it's true. The stick is this plastic toy. I mean, plastic as far as plasticity of imagination and where children can go with that work and what we can do from a mathematical perspective to rich language work that the children do with that. And so there's a lot to say around that. But risk, vital, vital and important. We do let children climb trees at our school. And then there was a young girl who for the very first time was fire poling up a tree. And she was about 20 or so feet up, just under 20 feet. And she was trying to reach for another tree. And I said, well, maybe not today, sweetheart. And, you know, just stay where you are. And she looked at me with a shining eye. She slid all the way down, got to the bottom, 2 feet apart like Wonder Woman, you know, and she looked at me and she said, wow, that was impressive.
David, I want to bring you into the conversation. Your book, Run Wild, is part of sort of a long heritage of Maine. It's modern. It's responding to this idea of nature deficit disorder. But you feel as though you're part of a real Maine heritage for outdoor books.
Oh, my. Can I say that? I don't know if I am yet.
Or
but
other
I sure
people
would love
are
to.
Saying that.
No, I mean, I grew up with children's literature. Actually, my mom was a kindergarten teacher, so I knew really early on Robert McCluskey and Barbara Cooney and those fantastic books. And yeah, there's a rich history in Maine of children's literature, and it's all based in the outdoors. So if that's true, I'm happy to carry that torch for nature books coming from Maine. But I actually wanted to get back to a point about cleanliness and risk, because I think it's easy to sort of say, oh, we're about digital. And I think Richard made a good comment. We don't want to demonize digital because, of course, it's going to be part of our lives. But one of the points about Run Wild also is this idea of you can just go out. And in the book, there's no adult supervision at all.
Good.
And that almost feels like a radical idea these days. But the kids are barefoot and they're out and they get bruises. And you know what? Are you okay? Sure. Let's keep going. There's an element of sort of finding your own way and your own strength by having some independence in the outdoors.
All right. Before we go to another break, I'm going to read a tweet from John. One good tool I used to get my kids interested in outdoors was geocaching. I told them it was treasure hunting, though, because geocaching is a weirder word. Now we still geocache all over, even in their teens. Well, we'll be right back with more talk about getting kids connected with nature. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, and Plummer Senior Living at Ocean View at Falmouth, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow beginning at 1 p.m. on Maine Public Classical.
To sit here and watch land that you pay taxes on and that you could grow crops on be sloughing off into the river.
We cannot control the flow. We just take advantage of the flow.
This is our river, and it's our water. They don't own it.
Damming the Long Tidal River. On Next from the New England News Collaborative. Please join us.
Stay with us for Next in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. Mainers go to the voting booth on Tuesday, deciding on local races, the future of ranked choice voting, nominees for governor, and a Democratic nominee for the 2nd congressional district seat. Maine Public has an online resource to help you make an informed decision in the voting booth. Your Vote 2018. The site features the latest election news, primary candidate interviews, and their stances on the issues. You'll also find the on-air debate schedule, as well as the debates themselves for on-demand viewing. It's all online at mainepublic.org/yourvote.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Connecting Children with Nature. Joining me today, author, illustrator, and educator Sharon Lovejoy. David Koval, a children's book author and illustrator. His new book is Run Wild. And Ann Stiers is director of Juniper Hill School. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to read a Facebook post, then a tweet. Maddie writes, the fact that we listened when our young son was craving nature and ended up sending him, then his sister, on wilderness canoe trips every summer has made a hugely positive impact on their lives. It's never easy to be without them during summer months, but the benefits outweigh the hardships. They arrive home beaming, resilient, stronger, and more confident. Please check out Friends of Waben, an organization dedicated to the idea that you're discussing today, by helping fund scholarships and programs that bring kids and nature together. And then a tweet from the Maine Outdoor School. Thanks for covering this topic. We agree that all students, regardless of where they live or their socioeconomic status, deserve meaningful, positive outdoor learning experiences. That's why we started the Maine Outdoor School in 2016 to help provide those opportunities in rural Maine. So thank you for both of those. We'll go to Laura, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for having this show. I just wanted to say thank you, especially to Richard Louvre and to Ann Stiers for being change makers in this area. They've had such a huge impact. Richard Louvre nationally and Ann in Maine. I just saw her speak at a conference in Farmington a couple weeks ago, and she is amazing. I recommend her as a speaker. I'm calling because my work for the past 15 years, so starting in 2003, has been around bringing nature to school grounds, and that has been based on the idea that so many children spend time on school grounds, even if their parents don't take them outside, they're guaranteed outdoor time at recess. And so we try to work with schools to bring nature to the school ground. And we've been lucky to work with a really amazing landscape architect, Sashi Meisner, who knows about children's development. And I am just calling to say I hope the conversation can move forward on what playgrounds look like in our state and in our country. And how can we move away from the worry about liability and maintenance and worry more about what kids need? And it's really tough.
Yeah, well, Laura, thanks for your work, and thanks so much for calling in. Chris on Facebook says, I'd like to mention a resource for connecting kids with nature here in Maine. The Vernal Pool Lab at UMaine created a hybrid coloring book and field guide called My First Guide to Vernal Pools. It's available for free download. And so the person who wrote in, Chris, says one family even using it as a bedtime story and their children became interested in amphibians. So thank you, Chris, for that. We'll go to Bob, who's calling from China, Maine. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm really excited that you have this show here. And one of the things that happened for me, I'm the oldest of 12 and I grew up in Augusta. And my father, with the Rotary Club, helped set aside the Augusta Nature Education Center, the land. They put aside this land. He used to take us out at 5:30 in the morning before he had to go to work. And, you know, we'd point out the flowers, the Linnaeus borealis americana, which is, of course, the twin flower. But the really neat thing about this, I know the time is short here, is this now is behind Coney High School in Augusta, 5 miles of trails. It's really, really pretty neat.
Fabulous place. Fabulous.
That's cool. Great.
Bob,
congratulations.
Thanks for calling in. And wow, 12 kids. I bet you guys were sent outside to play some, huh?
Oh, a whole lot.
Well, it's amazing.
Grow up is Maine.
It sure is, but it is amazing how those ranges have changed over time. There's a wonderful study that was done in England, actually, for many generations, just on 8-year-olds or thereabouts, where children several generations ago were ranging something like 6 miles away, and then one generation it became 1 mile away, and then exactly. to the end of the cul-de-sac, and then outside the backyard. And so that has changed in 4 generations drastically, and we're looking at the same thing here in Maine. So,
Bob, thanks for calling in. Yeah, we'll go to John, who's calling from Elliott, Maine, if my clicker will click. There we go. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to thank Richard Louv and Sharon Lovejoy for the amazing work they've done. The first children's garden I ever designed was after Richard's book came out, and I started to see studies about how kids know fewer than 10 animals and plants in their backyards, but that they know over 1,000 corporate logos. And to me, that's a cultural disease that's happening. Wow. And I love this concept of nature deficit disorder that's about really reconnecting kids. And apart from children's gardens, I think school gardens, as was just mentioned, is another critically important way to develop science and social studies and math curriculum around food coming to table from a garden. But also when we involve kids in all of these facets of garden and landscape, we end up fostering better environmental stewards. And when we were younger, for each and every one of us, somebody, if we have any love for gardening, probably made that connection. And I think what's really important in the work of Sharon's and Richard's and all of your other presenters is that we are the next generation of garden mentors, and each of us has a role to play, even if it's just reaching out to one kid.
Absolutely. So,
exactly. And one kid is the beginning, John. I can't remember where you're calling from.
Elliott, Maine, yep.
Oh, okay, because I was thinking Belfast. I went to the gardens that, and John had mentioned kids growing food. In Belfast, Maine, they have one of the best children's gardens and greenhouses, and then the kids get to sell their produce and taste their produce, and that's a great reward for the kids. So thank you for mentioning that.
We actually go 1 mile down the road to a farmer who's he's a 9th generation Alna farmer, and we help him pack for market. So we actually go to him.
That's great.
It's been incredible because he's in his 80s now. So.
Well, John, thanks for calling. And I think this is interesting, too, because we're talking about farming. When we're talking about the outdoors, we're not talking about, you know, just necessarily tide pooling or hiking in the woods, but eating dinner at a picnic table or going to the farmer's market. Right, Sharon?
Absolutely.
Yes, I take my grandchildren to the farmers markets because they can meet the farmers or the gardeners. They can taste good food. They learned about organic food. And I think it's an incredible learning experience for them. But I also think something as simple as spreading a blanket out to watch a meteor shower, or, you know, there are just so many simple things. I don't think you need to have a recipe. You just need to go out and experience things. And I love the farmers markets, and I'm a sucker for those roadside stands in Maine.
Yeah, you don't need a lot of dollars either. Nature is one of the most wonderful free resources we have.
Yeah, I give my grandchildren money to buy food every week, and it's just like I'm giving them the best thing in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's great. That's great.
We'll go to Liga calling from Friendship. Hi, Liga. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm very much interested in the program that you've had today. I'm a retired teacher living now in Maine, and I want to first just bring to attention, which I'm sure all of your guests know, Sense of Wonder by Rachel Carson, and that
one other person
with a child to make those connections. And if it can't be a parent or a grandparent, there are lots of people willing. But I wanted to just give a quick list of some things other than school that are right here, especially in the Mid-Coast area, that are wonderful experiences for children in nature. And one is the Children's Garden at the Coastal Maine Botanic Gardens, and they have a full educational program and just a delight. And I also would like to encourage 4-H participation again. It's a movement needs to be resurrected and infused with enthusiasm, but they're out there. There's the Farms program in Damariscotta, which connects kids with food and how food comes to their table. The Coastal Children's Museum in Rockland has wonderful things that connect nature through the seasons and is open year-round. And then also Merry Spring Gardens in Camden. So I have a whole list, as you can see.
Lika, thanks so much for calling. And you know, we're tight on time, but I know that Ann, you wanted to talk about some resources for teachers as well, since Lika's a former teacher. Yeah. What is available to teachers here in Maine that they may not know about? Yeah.
And Lika, thank you for your call. It's wonderful to offer those resources out there. And I would highlight 4-H, especially Tanglewood 4-H Camp and Learning Center and Blueberry Cove and the others that are listed around the state. So as far as being able to access some wonderful opportunities for teachers in Maine, this is actually the very first summer that Juniper Hill is offering some training programs. And so we have had for the last couple of years an observation program where teachers have come from all over the region and now nationally and from Canada to come to the school to see what we do. And so we become this model school. And one of the other things, I mean, I feel like we're ancient 7 years in, but there aren't very many programs that were much before ours. And so the other amazing opportunity, because it's the only one in the whole country like it, is Antioch University in Keene, New Hampshire, which is about 4 hours from, 3 hours from Portland. And they have a nature-based certificate program that can be spread out over a few years, but it can also be done in a single year as a certificate for existing teachers or a master's degree that is highly focused on all of this sort of nature-based work. And the Natural Start Alliance and Best Practices are about to come out very soon, and we were a bunch of us were a part of that product. So I just encourage both the CNNN Network and the Natural Start Alliance and Antioch University for teachers. So thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, all of you. This is a little bit shortened show today because of music that moves me and our Friday poem. But I want to thank Ann Stiers, the founder and director of Juniper Hill School. David Koval is a children's book author. His new book is Run Wild. And Sharon Lovejoy is an author, illustrator, lecturer, and teacher. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This show will be on again tonight at 7. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.